From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook.
And I'm Michelle Norris. For decades now, the U.S. has invested billions of dollars in high-tech warfare, things like precision-guided weapon systems and unmanned aerial vehicles. It turns out that those weapons have their limits in Iraq, where the enemy can easily blend in with civilians and the battlefield is often a crowded urban street. A recent article in the National Journal magazine looks at the military's challenge in dealing with so-called intimate killing, a term coined by retired Army War College Commandant Major General Robert Scales, a frequent guest on this program. Sidney Friedberg Jr. wrote the article, and he says the military is now spending more effort training soldiers to engage in intimate killing and training them in how to deal with the aftermath.
A lot of the combat is a few feet away. I've talked to soldiers about, well, the young Special Forces captain quoted in the article, Chris Morris, who's got two Bronze Stars for Valor, was charging over a low hill, a small rise, and he was all of a sudden within about 2 or 3 feet from four Iraqi troops. He had been trained so intensively that he was moving, even as he ran forward in this very chaotic, stressful situation, with his rifle to his shoulder. They hadn't been trained to the same degree, so they were carrying their rifles at the hip. That gave him about a 3 or 4 second advantage. And he put his rifle to each one in turn at about 2 feet of distance and shot them all. Now, this guy is an exceptional soldier. Everybody I've talked to agrees with that. But that speaks to the intimacy of the violence and also how the military's obsessive emphasis on training, you know, every bit of detail.
How is the military, since we're talking about a case where the battlefield is often a city street, a densely populated urban environment, how is the military training the troops to handle this kind of combat?
It's very difficult because the traditional approach that we learned in World War II for dealing with a city was you pound the hell out of it with artillery and you don't move in the streets because in the streets you're exposed, you'll get shot. You move from building to building by blowing through the wall and you go in through every door firing. And if there are any civilians around, well, that's really too bad. But we can't do that here and people have to be trained to switch that killer instinct on and off as needed. You can't have that when you go through the door and discover a bunch of kids. But if you don't have that killer instinct, and if you can't access it when you go through the door and you discover a guy who's got a suicide vest on, is about to blow it and the building and everyone around, then you're dead. And a lot of other people will be dead, too.
So how is the military doing that? How are they training the troops to flip that switch on and off?
For example, they're using more realistic targets. They've long been using cardboard cutouts of enemy soldiers that will pop up on a firing range. Because if they've discovered if you train people to shoot a bullseye, they're very good at shooting bullseyes, but bullseyes really attack you. And they've now started putting in a mix of targets. Some will be women and children. Some will be unarmed men. Sometimes it's simply a matter of you're told, okay, today we shoot the targets that have a red square on them, but not the ones with the blue X.
You know, you talk about the physical training that they go through. It seems like this would also entail quite a bit of psychological training to, as you say, flip that switch on and off. You mentioned something in this article called battle mind.
Exactly.
What is that? And
that is an attempt to wrestle with the issues of post-traumatic stress and, to some degree, traumatic brain injury by putting in a traditional military framework. This approach is saying, you are trained to be self-disciplined. You can apply your self-discipline to monitoring your own mental health. You are trained to take care of your buddies. You can apply that training, that comradeship, that ethos, to talking with them about things that trouble them, to asking them if they're okay.
But even with this new style of combat, as I understand, only 17% of soldiers report symptoms of PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. It seems like that number might be higher. What explains that relatively low number given this kind of combat?
Yeah, the remarkable thing is that 83% of people who spend, in the case of the Army, a year, now 15 months, in Iraq, 83% of people come home and don't report any post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms.
Don't report.
Yes.
Doesn't mean they don't have them.
These surveys are anonymous, so their report rates are probably pretty good, but there is a whole issue the Army struggles with about stigma. This whole battle mind training is very much geared at saying, look, if you were physically hurt, you'd go see the medic or the doctor. If you are having psychological stress, you need to take care of that too.
Sydney Friedberg, thank you for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you.
Sydney Friedberg, Jr. is a staff correspondent for the National Journal.